You are listening to a One Flower Two Turtles audio production.
Oh, hi. We are live from a kissing booth, apparently.
Yeah, the kissing booth. Haven't seen that movie. Won't see that film. But anyway, big kiss.
I thought that was even a movie, but yes.
Yeah, it's a film. Anyway, big kiss to all of you. Mwah. We are back again with a predictions episode. Yay!
Two very different sets of predictions, because you're doing the highbrow, and I'm doing the other stuff.
I am a very sophisticated adult.
I like the bits with the knives and stuff.
He's a very, like, scummy little rascal, isn't he?
They're one of those scummy guys from Surrey, yeah.
I like how, like, it's kind of, it's almost like, as people, that's a flip. Like, I'm a scummy ass person, but like my taste in film, mwah, highbrow art. and then you carry yourself as almost like a very sophisticated person, but then you love all stabby stabby stuff.
Yeah,
and superhero stuff. There's a real contradiction here.
Yeah,
we're yin and yang.
I mean, I do spend my time criticizing that most of the superhero stuff isn't good enough. But then I like the genre because yeah, go figure.
Fair enough. Yeah, so we're going to divide this into like two parts even. I don't know. We'll see how long we talk, but the Oscars are approaching.
What like, are they? What are they, Dan? What are the Oscars?
They are Hollywood's pay to win best films of the year. We know this at this point. I've studied it. Apparently, they put $10 million, need that much to have an Oscar campaign.
Right.
So, yeah, it's pay to win. But
it's nice.
But I like them. I don't know. I like films. So a show in which there is, I like films, and everyone loves a bit of competitiveness. So I like the Oscars sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's also the BAFTAs, but I don't really know when that's happening. But I'll watch it. And when it, because you know, it'll be on at a time, a reasonable time. Oscars would have to be up at like 3 a.m. to watch them. I have done that before.
The 19th of February at 7 p.m. is GMT, is when the BAFTAs are happening.
Oh boy.
Whereas the Oscars is the 13th of March at midnight. Ooh. Jesus Christ. Okay.
At midnight. Ooh. Yeah, maybe I'll watch them this year. Who knows? I have in previous years, but I'm going to do some of my predictions on who I think, like, there's who I think will win, and then there's who I want to win, you know?
Yeah.
And you can let me know the same, who you think will win, who you want to win, if you think I'm right, if you think I'm wrong. But this is just who I'm going to think.
No opinion on anything.
And Ollie here has no opinion. So I'll be talking about the big five. It's really like it'd be more than five because I'm going to do all acting categories. So supporting and lead actor and actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be doing both screenplay, so original and adapted. So mm-hmm. I'll be talking about those. After I've done. I've given my Oscar predictions. Ollie over here, what are you going to be talking about, Ollie?
So, I like Scream, if anyone didn't know.
What?
No. I know, right? I don't know when that joke will become tired, but not yet. Probably around April after the film comes out. But yeah,
What's Scream, Ollie?
It's a horror franchise that makes fun of and is part of a subgenre. Which
no
is
way.
A subgenre I like. When in writing up thoughts for the previous episode of this about our thoughts on upcoming things, I wrote quite a bit on Scream. It was just a stream of consciousness, and I was like, "Yes, it should probably be its own thing." And so we're going to do that as its own thing, tied in with the Oscars, two very compatible things.
Yeah, I think we're going to do a Scream special, and I think we are planning on doing that, but when the film actually comes out, and I'll review of it, and then that will be a Scream special. But
imagine if I end up hating this next Scream film after all I've mentioned it.
I mean, it does have the potential to be bad.
I mean,
in the sense of anything that kind of separates is like it's the film that's probably going to separate itself the most from like the core, you know, like it's got like one of the legacy characters in it, and it's now its own thing. Whereas like the Scream 5, right, it worked because
should we save this for the Scream section, because
we probably should, but I'll just finish the point briefly. Okay. It's like Scream 5 worked as it was a kind of you know, that reboot remake of the first one, so it was paying respect to the next one. Then now they're having to do their own ideas, so it's a bit like it can go either way. But anyway, I can chime in a bit with my predictions on Scream 6. However, I clearly won't have as much to say as Ollie does. So yeah. As we both have ideas that are both predictions, we've just put them into one episode where I get to talk and Ollie gets to talk. So, I thought we'd begin though with the Oscars, because I asked Ollie beforehand. He said, "Do Oscars first." So let's get this
end on the good one.
Okay, all right. Listen here. You little shit. Let's talk about some highbrow movies that are new. I mean, normally I pride myself on having seen like all the Oscar films, because it's like I prefer more you know, like standalone movie, like independent films. And although these are, you know, we've got major backings behind them and mostly made by major studios. Mm-hmm. They're not exactly independent, but they are still standalone arty stories. This year, I haven't seen as many as I would have liked to before really doing this, but I am still aware about you know, the other movies, and kind of I can make my own predictions from there. So, I've got my notes up here, and the first category I put in is original screenplay. And so the nominees for the original screenplay are The Banshees of Inisherin, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, and Triangle of Sadness. Now, I have seen three of those movies. I haven't seen Tar, and I haven't seen Triangle of Sadness. I think Tar's still in the cinema, so I might try and give it a go, but I have not heard great reviews from people who've seen it. I've heard it's like a 90-page script that's a 2.5-hour movie. So... Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I think they're saying like, yeah, it does feel that way. It feels really slow. And maybe if it wasn't a 90-minute movie, maybe some people would like it more. But also people tell me it's a very pretentious. So I don't know. I'm not rushing out to see it. And Triangle of Sadness, that won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival in was it March time or something? Or April, something like that, in 2022. And, I haven't seen that of it. I think I did. I remember seeing it. It was in the cinemas. I didn't get around to seeing it because I heard it wasn't overly good. So a bit surprised it's there. But Fabelmans, Banshees of Inisherin, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Well, I didn't like The Banshees of Inisherin, and it wasn't that I didn't like it. I didn't hate it either or anything. It just didn't do anything for me. It's written by Martin McDonagh, and I just thought this is the weakest of the four movies he's made. I prefer In Bruges is his best, and I think Three Billboards is second. And I think it was just a film that's very mundane, and because like the characters are mundane, their life's mundane, the film felt mundane, so I just wasn't a big fan of it. But I don't know. I think it might win, but I wouldn't want it to. I would want Everything Everywhere All at Once to win, because I saw The Fabelmans like a couple days ago, and I loved that film. I do feel like script wise, a thing that with The Fabelmans, it's more the directing was good. So I don't know, script wise, there were some sort of soggy moments and stuff. But Everything Everywhere All at Once, it's just so out there, so It's really entertaining, really wacky, really creative, really original, and also keeps the heart of its story and still has the emotion within it. So it could be this wacky comedy 1 minute, but also have a really heartfelt moment another. And I think that's not just great directing, but great writing. And so I would put Everything Everywhere All at Once to win that award, but I think Banshees of Inisherin. So that's my thoughts on original screenplay. Next, adapted screenplay. Now, nominees for this one are All Quiet on the Western Front, Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, Living, Top Gun Maverick, and Women Talking. I've only seen one of these films, and that is Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery. I have not seen... I don't think Women Talking's out yet. Top Gun Maverick, like, I didn't see it in the cinema. I know it was this big movie that was this big sort of cinemas are back and everything. I just didn't... I think it was because I wanted to... I've seen Top Gun, but I can't remember a single thing from Top Gun except for that, the music and unintentionally gay moments from the film. The moments were so hyper-masculine, they were gay, you know?
I've seen Top Gun, and yeah, it was a film my dad was very excited to show me at one point, and it was fine to me very much because it's a not my kind of film thing. But yeah, I don't think I would remember anything about it, but I have heard since it's very homoerotic. 14-year-old me didn't realize, so I had no opinion at that point. But
all those things that's so masculine, it was just gay. You
know? I mean, from what I remember of the story, it's just. There isn't one really. It's just, oh, bro, you're great, man. Yeah, you too, bro. This it feels like a very that kind of film. Yeah, but I can't really remember.
That's the thing. People I've seen
fly
it.
In the film. I don't know that it's relevant to anything.
Yeah,
but
I've seen it. I seen it when I was a lot younger, but I wanted to see it again before I saw Top Gun Maverick. I just couldn't find a copy of it that I didn't have to go on like Prime and pay and rent it for some money. I was looking for it on like Netflix stuff. I don't have the DVD because I think how I saw it is I think it was on Netflix like years ago or something like that. But or I saw it on like a VHS when I was a kid. I don't remember, but like I couldn't get a hold of a copy, and I didn't really want to go out and buy a copy. Yeah, I just wanted to stumble across a copy, and I just didn't, so I didn't see Top Gun Maverick. But the fact it's got these awards recognitions and everything like that, and people saying it's great, and I love to see a belated sequel that's, you know, makes some kind of impact in that way, you know. And it's because normally belated sequels is just that's a recipe for disaster. But in recent times,
do it for you,
huh?
Dumb and Dumber 2 didn't do it for you?
I've never seen Dumb and Dumber 2. I'm not going to see Dumb and Dumber 2. That just seems sad to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, because it normally has a name for being like, they're just going to ruin it. But of recent years, they've actually been pulling out the bag. So, and this seems to be another case of that. So I'll check it out. But yeah, haven't seen Living, although I know it's a remake of a Akira Kurosawa film. But you know, rather than being set in Japan, it's set in like England, you know. So Bill Nye is the lead, and I don't know, it looked just like a bog standard period piece, and I don't like period movies, so it just didn't stand out to me. I just thought, what is this? And so the fact it's got nominations, like, okay, maybe I will check it out. I've heard nothing but great things, but just haven't seen it. And All Quiet on the Western Front, and that's on Netflix. So I don't really have an excuse to have not seen it, but I'm surprised because I know that All Quiet on the Western Front was already a Best Picture winning movie because in like the 40s when that the original film came out. So the fact that this one's even, because I know it's a German film, so the fact that it's broken out of the international category into the main categories is impressive. So I normally think that like foreign language movies are normally the best films because they can take more narrative risks and just sort of be a lot more creative. And normally they feel more creative because they're not got the problem of mass marketing. But of all the ones I've seen is Glass Onion and Knives Out Mystery, and I love that film. I think it was at either as good or slightly not as good as Knives Out. But when Knives Out was nominated, I thought Knives Out should have won. It's not going to win. I don't think it's going to win because it's like the only nomination the film's got. And, you know, that it normally happens like that when there's a script that gets nominated and it's the only sort of nomination a particular movie gets. Like, I remember when I watched First Reformed and that got the script's nomination. I thought it should have won, but it was like the only nomination the film got. But yeah, this is like going to be a case like that. I think it's going to go a little quiet on the Western Front because that film's been getting like, I think it led the BAFTA nominations, had the most there. And that's just my gut feeling. I just think it's going to go to that movie because there's been a lot. I haven't seen as much hype award wise with the rest of them. Like Women Talking and Living is kind of just like, feels a bit of a surprise it's there. Like, it's just that kind of movie that seems to just get, that gets in, wins nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what those films feel like to me. And Top Gun Maverick is just, you know, blockbuster that got good reviews that could pay its way in there, you know?
Mm.
So I think it'll go to All Quiet on the Western Front, but I would want Glass Onion. That's adapted screenplay. Directing. Oh, this one. I think it's the same nominees of the original screenplay category, as it's Martin McDonagh for Banshees of Inisherin, Daniels from Everything Here All at Once, Steven Spielberg for The Fablemans, Todd Field for Tar, and Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness. Again, you know, I said I hadn't seen Tar or Triangle of Sadness, but I've seen the other three. Again, I don't want Banshees of Inisherin to win, which don't. I mean, it's not that it's, it just didn't do anything for me. But the other two films, I'm happy either way. I think I would want the Daniels to win because it's like their film is just such a, it's just an insane that it's as good as it is. A film that can, that the fact they're juggling tones so seamlessly and the creativity of their vision and everything, it's just, it's insane, but it's heartfelt, and I think that's a testament to their direction. So I'd want them to win, but as it's an A24 movie, you know, it's like the first time A24 I think's competed at the Academy Awards sort of thing. It'll probably, but yeah, I think it will go to Steven Spielberg for The Fablemans because that, like, having seen that film, the direction of the film is great. It's one of those films that it's a film about, you know, it's a film about filmmaking, you know, it's sort of a semi-autobiographical thing for him. And the way that the film showcases the power of cinema, and it lets filmmaking tell the story. Like, there's scenes with no dialogue where it's the story being told through purely through visuals and facial expressions and everything. And those moments is like, this makes sense. That, you know, like Steven Spielberg, you know, the most famous like director in the world, you know, like, everybody knows Steven Spielberg, and you know, that guy makes a film about cinema. And then you expect big things. And then I saw The Fablemans, and it wasn't a perfect film. I did figure it had tonal issues, in that sometimes it'd have a really happy scene cut straight to a really sad scene, or vice versa. But like with like literally like a hard cut, and like the tone is just shift like that. And I think he was trying to, that was purposefully done a couple of times, but it just felt jarring, and it kind of throws you out a bit. And when they focus on like family drama stuff, and like it's not about filmmaking, it's more about the family drama, that can get a little bit stale. And that can kind of, and the film's too long. It the film does feel like it's about 2.5 hours, like, which it is. But like when it focuses on the filmmaking and it has scenes that are purely about, because it's about this, you know, this kid who wants to make films and stuff in like the '50s. And so when it focuses on like a film he's made or people's reaction to a film he's made, and it's really showing the power of cinema, those scenes are fantastic. And they're like exceptional stuff. And those scenes were superbly directed. So if Spielberg won, it wouldn't be like let's just give the award to Spielberg. Like, I think it's the best film he's made of the 21st century, which isn't saying an awful lot, you know, because, like, not going to lie, since, like, you know, Saving Private Ryan, he hasn't really made a classic, you know? And even then, people have issues with Saving Private Ryan, you know? You can't really think of a film he's made since then that's been like, oh, like, because he had a great 90s and then a great 80s, you know, and it's the 70s where he made Jaws and First Encounters and everything. So he's like, but in the 21st century, sort of kind of fallen off a bit. He's still made some good movies, but nothing that's kind of sticks in the memory.
Yeah, nothing super iconic.
Exactly, nothing iconic. And I don't know if this movie is necessarily iconic, but I do think it's like, it's his most personal film. It feels like it's his most personal film, considering I saw Empire of Light, which is Sam Mendes's, you know, ode to cinema, and seeing how that film just had, like, no cinematic flair whatsoever. And then seeing this, I'm like, this is how you do it right. You know, this is how, if you're making a film about your love for cinema, you showcase what cinema can do. And it was a great, and Spielberg did it. It was like, it had some interesting casting choices in it, like David Lynch playing John Ford.
Right,
That was good. And yeah, it's just, you know, if he wins, it won't be just here's an award for Spielberg because we're well done. But like, he would have earned this one. Okay? It's not like every other time he's been nominated in the 21st century, because it's just where it's like, you're kidding, right? Like when he got nominated for The Post, like what was The Post even doing there? Like, I just don't even. Anyway, I want Daniels to win the best directors, because I think they are the best directors in this category, in this, well, of these films. But if Spielberg wins, I'm not going to complain. But I think he probably will win it. All right. Supporting actor. Cool. Huh. So in supporting actor, we have Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan for The Banshees of Inisherin, because this film's just getting nominated everywhere. Brian Tyree Henry in Causeway, Judd Hirsch in The Fablemans, and Ki Hu Kwan, I hope I got his name right, in Everything Everywhere All at Once. So the only performance I haven't seen is Brian Tyree Henry, because I don't know where Causeway came. I don't know anything about Causeway. I know it's a Jennifer Lawrence film. And he's a supporting actor in it and everything. I haven't seen it, though, so I can't really comment on that. But Brian Tyree Henry's great in whatever he does. Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan, they do their job. You know, they're both great actors. They do great performances. Just a shame I just wasn't a big fan of the film. John Hirsch is interesting, because he's in the film for 10 minutes. He's in the movie for 10 minutes. And it is a really great performance, and it is probably, it's very memorable in that he plays like this guy called Uncle Boris, who comes over to the stay with the family for a little while. And he's like a circus performer or something. And he has this whole big scene with the main character telling him that like art's gonna rip you apart, you know, you gotta pick art or your family and stuff like that. And it's because I know that the actor is from like what Independence Day and stuff, and I was like, oh yeah, oh, he's finally got a role, and it's good that he's got the nomination, although it is for like a 10-minute scene. But you know, gotta go to Short Round. Good old Short Round, Ki Hu Kwan. I think he's been winning it in the at the other award ceremonies thus far, and I would want him to win. I think I would, because it's a performance that balances emotion and comedy, you know, and I think that's hard to do. I think it's the one I'm rooting for. I think, and it's the one I think is gonna. I think it's the one that left an impression on me, whereas I think I remember like Judd Hirsch's one, but it wasn't 10 minutes. It was 10 minutes. It was like one long scene was all he was really in the film for. They were all great sort of actors, great performances. Could go to any of them, but my pick is just like, want and think would be Ki Hu Kwan for Everything Everywhere All at Once. I just love that film, man. I just like it's there in that competing this year. Supporting actress, got Angela Bassett for Black Panther Wakanda Forever, because I guess, I don't know. I mean, she isn't one of those like iconic sort of actresses that has just, she's probably been nominated in the past, but she's never got the award. So I don't know if this feels a bit like a Lifetime Award, maybe. I don't know. But like, right. She's been like the first nominated for a Marvel movie. So then you got Hong Chau for, I hope that's right, for The Whale, Kerry Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin, and Jamie Lee Curtis and Stephanie Sue, I hope, I don't know, for sure. Everything Everywhere All at Once. Now, I have my notes that are written here, and I've kind of changed since I've seen. The only one I haven't seen is Wakanda Forever. I haven't seen it. I don't know. Not yet, but I think when it goes on Disney Plus, maybe. But like, I'm not fussed.
I think it is. I think it is recently on Disney Plus. I haven't caught it yet, but
fair enough. I'm just not fussed, really. I think I like Black Panther too much to be like. I feel like it works it as its own thing, and I like just its sort of like. With Chadwick Boseman's like death, I just like with that story, that kind of living in its own little standalone bubble. But I don't know. There's nothing, but because he's not in it, I don't know. I didn't feel like much of a pull to see it. Plus, Marvel's gradually losing my interest with it.
Marvel is lacking representation, so I'm eager to support Wakanda Forever.
Fair enough. But I don't remember much of Kerry Condon for. In Banshees of Inisherin, and I did in my notes. I think I put down that I thought Stephanie Sue, his Sue. I wanted her to win, but really, since I've seen The Whale, I think Hong Chau should win, because, like, what's it like? The Whale is like, it's very much kind of like an actor's movie, like it's a play. It's like kind of all set in one house. And, you know, performances in it are, you know, phenomenal. I don't know how I necessarily felt about the movie. Then on further reflection, I was like, okay, this film isn't necessarily marketed the way, like, the way it's marketed is a deep emotional thing. It is, but not in the way you think it is, sort of thing. It's not, it's a sad film, but it's, but you go in thinking it's a hopeful movie about how, about how important life is and stuff, but it's Darren Aronofsky, so it's hopeless.
I was expecting it to be pretty dire situation.
I thought that not like a hopeful movie, like things will be okay, but like a sad movie that has a glimmer of hope, but really it's just hopeless.
Right.
It's just a hopeless, quite sad, nihilistic film. But the performances, so I think Hong Chau, I think I'm getting her name right. I don't know. How would you pronounce the name?
Yeah, Hong Chau.
Hong Chau, all right. Hong Chau, I think she played, Brendan Fraser's characters. Charlie played his friend, or his, like, nurse friend called Liz. And her character was great. The performance was really, really good. And I would really want, like, I think that the Whale should win all the awards it's nominated for. I think it should win. And this is, you know, this is one of them. Like, it got, like, I think makeup effects. Yeah, it should win. You know, Hong Chau should definitely win as a supporting actress, but it's probably going to go to Angela Bassett as the career win. But so it's different to my notes where I put Stephanie Sue would win, or I would want her to win. But I think I really couldn't really decide on this category. But now I've seen a film and a performance, I think, yes, that one. So I've changed. It actually is one I want now, which is Hong Chau for The Whale. Cool. On to lead actor. I kind of spoiled this already. Nominations are Austin Butler for Elvis, Colin Farrell for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Paul Mescal for After Sun and Bill Nye for Living. What a lot of honkies. What a white category. Anyway, it's a, you know, Oscars so white, all that stuff, because yeah, they are. And I get the controversy that they've been having around Andrea Riseborough, and it's a bit like, it's not her that's the controversy, but I'll get onto that when it gets to the
I'm unaware of the actresses. So please, all right,
I'll go into that. But yeah, it's quite a white, it's a white category. We're all white men. You know, I've seen Elvis, I've seen Banshees of Inisherin, and I've seen The Whale. I've not seen After Sun or Living. Those nominations, After Sun and Living, is just like, those are surprises. You know, I didn't expect Bill Nye or Paul Mescal to get nominated. So I think that would, I don't even think they did. I think they were nicely surprised by that as well. And they don't really have a chance, but it's nice they're there, you know? So it's basically between Brendan Fraser, Colin Farrell, or Austin Butler. And yeah, if you go by like Oscar rules, they love giving Oscars to performances of people playing real people, you know? Like they gave Rami Malek for Freddie Mercury. You got Daniel Day-Lewis for Abraham Lincoln. You know, they love giving it to people who play real people. Gary Oldman for Churchill. You know, so if you go by that, it's probably going to go to Austin Butler, because he's the only performance there that's an actual living person. And you know, it fits. It's a real Oscar baity kind of thing. However, watching Elvis, I didn't like the movie, and I didn't think Austin Butler was particularly good either. I didn't think he was bad. I thought he did a good job, but it is, you know, it's an Elvis impression. And I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, like, I don't get why Oscars are so fixated on actors who portray real people. I don't know what that fixation is. And I think Austin Butler's great. I think he'll get an Oscar someday. I wouldn't want it to be this year, though. I would personally want Brendan Fraser for The Whale. For, you know, like, there's that personal bias of everybody loves Brendan Fraser, you know? Everybody loves the guy. He's lovely, but his performance does carry this movie. He is in a movie, this, like, although he doesn't necessarily do much physically, well, he does, but it is a performance about a morbidly obese gay man trying to reconnect with his daughter, and he's... It is a really good performance, although maybe the script gives him not the best stuff to not the best lines that kind of make his performance at times maybe seem cheesy, but it doesn't feel like it. He always feels kind of grounded, genuine in his performance. I think it's a very apt one. I feel like this is to Brendan Fraser what Birdman was to Michael Keaton. Like it's kind of a performance that kind of eerily in some ways mirrors their real life. So like Michael Keaton, he used to play Batman, kind of disappeared from everything, and he made a comeback with Birdman, and in which he plays a guy famous for playing a superhero who's now planning a comeback. So it's quite, and he got an Oscar nomination for that. He didn't win it though, but I think I can't remember who he lost to, but yeah. But with Brendan Fraser in this one, it's like, you know, it's a guy who kind of, the world kind of shut the door, you know, shut the door to him. You know, he kind of went through hard times. He gained a lot of weight, and now he's looking for redemption, sort of thing, in a way, which is kind of similar to his real life. Like he spiraled. We all kind of forgot about him. He gained a lot of weight, and then his problems sort of ended. Like in that he got stuck in like some like family court problems of like having to pay a lot of money for, this is all I've heard. I don't really know the internet. They got like blacklisted because of his sexual assault from the Hollywood Foreign Press. Yeah. So you can see why he didn't win the Golden Globe. So although Austin Butler won the Golden Globe, it's not really an accurate, accurate result, because they were never going to give it to Brendan Fraser, you know, the guy that they fucked, you know. Nah. But I don't know. We'll see. I hope it goes to Brendan Fraser. I think, you know, because of Oscar rules, they'll probably give it to Austin Butler. But I don't know. Colin Farrell's also won some awards for sort of like, don't want to say lesser awards, because it still got value, but like not as famous awards, I guess. And he's been winning for Banshees of Inisherin. But at the same time, I'm just not a fan of that film. He did have a great year, though. Colin Farrell had a really good year. But, you know, like The Batman, and I think he did a bunch of other critically acclaimed films. But, I would love Brendan Fraser to win. I think he needs it. Brendan Fraser needs it the most. I would just want him to win. Lead actress. This is where we get into the Oscars controversy this year. So, the controversy that I'm going to inform Ollie on now.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a... They had to do a review because of Andrea Riseborough's nomination. Because very white. You know, the Oscars are, as they normally are, quite white. You know, at best, they put one, maybe two black people in a category, you know. And it's a bit like, they really got to sort that shit out. There's so many years in which the best performances or the best, films have been made by, diverse filmmakers, and they just haven't been recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing is this year, because I remember discussing this, is because I think I was talking to my dad, and he was very much like, well, everybody that's seen the movie are just like, well, see the film, it's a good performance. And I'm like, I think the controversy is that Oscars are pay to win, basically. You put your campaign forward and everything like that, and there are, I think, two black centric movies, The Woman King and Till.
Mm-hmm.
And they went for Oscars. They put the campaign forward and everything, so you got the two leads in that performance, neither of which were nominated. And I think the controversy came from, you're telling people of color what the rules are. They play by the rules, and then you go, thank you for the money, but no. You know, it seems. And it's the fact that this performance from a movie nobody's heard of comes out of nowhere, that we didn't even know was campaigning, just comes in with the, you know, with a nomination. And it's like, what the hell is going on here? You know? And so, but then it's one of those things, I'm like, the controversy is not with Andrea Riseborough, because I'm pretty sure her performance is great. I've not seen the movie. I didn't hear about the movie until this nomination came about. But you know, maybe I will check it out. I don't know. Maybe. She's probably not going to win, though. Especially with this controversy, she's not going to win it. And so the other nominees are Cate Blanchett for Tar, Ana de Armas for Blonde, Michelle Williams for The Fabelmans, and Michelle Yeoh for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Now, I've already said how much I love Everything Everywhere All at Once, and I would want Michelle Yeoh to win. You know, also, it'd be a good diversity win. You know, it's a great performance. You know, the balance, she's having to, you know, it's doing the comedy and the heart, and having to, you know, balance those. And her character really has to grow throughout. And she's playing various different versions of herself as well. So it's like loads of different performances in one. You know, that would be a nice career win, but it wouldn't be like let's give it to her just because, here you go. It'd be an earned, an earned one. And I hope it wins, and I think it will, because I think she has been winning the awards sort of everywhere. Cate Blanchett, they do also love giving her awards, because she's Cate Blanchett. I don't know, they just love giving it to us. Ana de Armas one is weird, because I think Blonde got a lot of Razzie nominations. You know, got a lot of Worst Movie of the Year award nominations. And the fact that she's got her performance in here is a bit like, oh, okay. Interesting. I guess, again, they just love giving it to people who are able to look exactly like someone from the past. That's something I hate. When people credit, like, for example, when Gary Oldman won for his performance of Winston Churchill, everyone's like, he's unrecognizable as it. I'm like, yeah, because of the makeup team. You know?
Yeah.
The reason you don't see Gary Oldman is because the makeup team put him in a bunch of shit so that he looks like Winston Churchill. It's like, it feels like sometimes people are like, I know his performance is still good and everything like that, but it feels like sometimes people are a bit like, you do know that there's that the makeup made him look like that, you know?
Mm.
And, you know, all he has to really do is change his voice and then boom, oh my God, it's not Gary Oldman, you know? But that's something that annoys me sometimes. But anyway, I think Michelle Yeoh should win. It'd be a great, I'd love it if that happens. It'd be a great little moment if it did. I don't know. I put that I think Cate Blanchett would win, but I think that's more just because they love Cate Blanchett.
Mm.
You know, she's got like about what, 2 or 3 Oscars already. But then I'm a bit like, they don't really, I don't know. I don't know about that. Michelle Williams was good in The Fabelmans. Like, but she, and it was an, it did seem like she was acting as if she was in, you know, like a studio system, black and white era movie, which was quite good, like quite sort of dramatic. But I think Michelle Yeoh's performance was a lot more memorable. So that's so that's where I stand on that. I think, and I want Michelle Yeoh to win. And then last category, Best Picture. We have All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fabelmans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking.
Have you seen Avatar yet?
No.
Oh my goodness. I need to have a proper conversation with you about Avatar if and when you see it.
Okay. That's the thing. So of these movies, I've seen 1, 2, 3, 4. I've seen 4 of them. I've seen Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and The Fabelmans. Haven't seen Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, Women Talking, All Quiet on the Western Front, and Avatar: The Way of Water. Like, I keep saying to myself, like, I'll see it. I'll get to it. I'll get to it, because it's like it's going to be in the cinema for so long, and. And you know, I don't know. I'm in no rush because it's so long, and from what I'm hearing, it's like really not my thing. In that it's sort of what do you call it? All style, no substance.
Right.
From the sounds of things, and that's really not my style. But like, I might get to it. I think I've made some loose plans to see it, but never actually gone any further with them. But anyway. So I'm trying to look at this year in film, this year's Oscars. The two front runners, in my opinion, are good. I think it's kind of similar to like the Parasite and 1917 year, where it's a bit like, as a whole, it was okay. You know, as a whole, the Oscars Best Picture list was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like the front runners were just exceptional, you know. So I think it's Everything Everywhere All at Once and The Fabelmans, those two, mwah, beautiful, beautiful films, both great. I would personally want Everything Everywhere All at Once because it's more my kind of thing. It's, you know, it's more, I think it's a more creative film. I think it's more, it's more impressive. In that it's juggling of tones, it's the ideas that they're just throwing to the wall, and the fact they don't lose the heart at the core of its story and the process is just, that is an art in itself. But the Fabelmans is a really good testament of the power of cinema and what film can do, how it can make presents, how it can make someone appear, how it can resonate with a person. And the way that it can convey information as well, and the way that it does that is just, I always say, like, this is exceptional. Like, this proves what, you know, Spielberg knows his shit, you know, why Spielberg is Spielberg. So I would be happy with either. I'm assuming they're the front runners. You know, Banshees of Inisherin's kind of like maybe third, you know, like kind of like not in my personal taste, but like in the potential to be best picture. But I think it's those two front runners. I think Fablemans will win. I want Everything Everywhere All at Once to win. And that's that, really. I think it's pretty clear, you know. I like those films. I think I know where the Oscars are going to lean, but I hope they lean this way. And cool. That is my rundown of the, well, not top big five, but like basically the big five. Big five plus additional acting categories and script categories of the Oscars. Let me know what your thoughts are. And if you agree with me, if you disagree with me. And yeah, thanks for listening to that.
I rewatched Avatar: The Way of Water the other day, and I still love it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. It's, I mean, I think as well, the issues that I had the first time around didn't bother me as much as the second. It's not perfect, but it's such a good experience. It's just a great cinema experience, and I think the way, see, part of the thing with Avatar for me is that people say, comment on the style over the substance, but I think in the case of a film like that, a style is a big part of the substance, as in it's an event film. I sort of think of it like a Disney World ride kind of thing. Like, it's not a film that I judge necessarily in the same way, and part of what I love about it is the insane amount of effort put into the world. I kind of said this before, but just there's a lot of work put in. It's not just pretty visuals. Like, it's not like, I don't know, trying to pick another film, so, you know, a Marvel thing where it's just, oh cool, that's okay CGI, I guess. Like, the things that they're actually creating with the CGI, is they put a lot of thought in, and they create a great world with it. But I do also think the stories, while simple, are very resonant, and I like them. But I will talk more details, flaws and pros, if and when you see it.
Fair enough. I guess I got to check it out so that we can have that chat.
Who cares about that? It's time for Scream. Gosh, I feel so unprepared. I'm going to half read a ramble that I at some point wrote and half come off and bounce off ideas. So,
okay.
I don't know if I mentioned any of it last time. I don't think I did. But yeah, I love Scream.
I do not remotely remember. I know that you've been talking about wanting to do Scream 6 predictions for a while, but you have never told me anything about the actual detail, like anything about your predictions. So
yeah, no, it's in my little prologue bit that I think I mentioned last time, that it will amuse me. If it's bad, people are going to say, see, this is why you don't take horror films to New York, because Friday the 13th tried it and it failed. And
oh yeah, you mentioned stuff like that. Yeah,
it's part of the prologue that apparently mentioned last time. But I do hope they reference Jason Goes to Manhattan in the film. Have you seen that film? I don't know how much you've seen of Friday the 13th in general.
I've only seen the original.
Okay, it's what a watch. What did you like it?
No.
No.
I didn't.
Neither. I think I'm not sure if I fell asleep in 2 and 3, I believe. I don't know if I fell asleep in 1. It's just too dated.
I remember someone saying, I remember watching the first, I think I watched it with some people, and they were saying, like, I don't think Friday the 13th was ever good. And I was sat there like, not gonna lie, if this is the first film, and with most movie franchise and stuff, the first film's always the best.
Oh, no. It's, and, I mean,
well, it's, you know, and watching it, I'm like, no, I'm just not, no. I mean, I've seen the making of it, and I get why I don't like it. And the reason is because the film was literally only made to capitalize off Halloween.
Right, yeah.
And Halloween was great. I love Carpenter's Halloween, like the 1978 film. Love that film. And so watching this and then realizing, oh, there was no passion in this film. It was purely a money-grabbing thing in itself.
I think the thing that makes a Friday 13th film... See, I find Halloween dated as well, but Friday 13th, the problem is because it's all set in the same-ish location of cabins in the woods, it feels very samey. And so you can be a lot more dynamic with a Halloween film. I remember it being more or less a lot of slow shots and then someone getting stabbed. I think besides the twist at the end, it's not really worth anything. I know people seem to love, I think it's just 3 and 4, it might be 2 as well, maybe it's just 4, I don't know. I mean, the guy from the Goonies, I can't remember the actor's name, but he's considered the horror icon or the star of the Friday the 13th franchise by coming up the 3rd or 4th film. Those films were too dated for me at that point. I think watching all of those franchises, like they're, except Nightmare on Elm Street, love all of those, but except 2's not great. But there comes a point when you're like marathoning them where it's like, this is of a date that I can... that is similar enough to the stuff that I watch now that it doesn't feel too much. And that was about Friday the 13th 5, which isn't great, but it's watchable. It's not like falling asleep level of dated.
I'd like to note how you're opening your Scream 6 predictions by talking through the entire Friday the 13th.
I have a lot of thoughts on that, Frank. Anyway, Jason Takes Manhattan, I mean, it's not good, but I kind of enjoyed it because it was a little bit dynamic because it was a change in location. Hopefully the same will apply to Scream. I don't know if it will. I mean, Scream 3 wasn't great, and that went to LA, but I feel like saying, well, this other film changed the location of a city, therefore that's the problem. Like, that doesn't really matter at the end of the day, but obviously it's a bigger difference in Friday the 13th, where the others are all in the woods. Jason X is in space, that's the whole thing. Anyway, number one point I just want to talk about, I'm ready for anything the film can throw at me, but please don't. I don't think they will, but people loved the whole Stu from the first movie is actually alive and will be the killer. People love to predict that, and it's stupid. It's so stupid. The films have an
Matthew Lillard's too. It's already filmed. It's coming out yet, but he's going to be in the Five Nights at Freddy's movies. He's apparently signed a 3-movie deal for it.
Right.
I think it would make sense. Let me finish the point.
Okay.
It wouldn't make sense in terms of the films. It would make sense if they did bring him back because of Matthew Lillard's the nostalgic popularity they're having for him as Shaggy in the Scooby-Doo films.
Yeah.
And, it wouldn't make sense. And, it'd be cool to see Matthew Lillard in something again, but like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
not that.
I do like Matthew Lillard, but no. I mean, especially of all of the various killers and their motivations, I mean, I like it in what the film is doing with the whole not having a motivation, but also there's not enough to that character to have bring for them to be worth bringing them back. So nah, just don't do it. I don't know why people. I guess I do know why people want it because people like Matthew Lillard, which I do too. But nah.
I did think what I thought one of the thing I'm actually looking forward to, the thing I'm looking forward to see what they do, and I hope they play into it in this new film, is what they introduced with the protagonist in the fifth movie.
Yeah,
the fact she sees the she has a sort of psychosis image of Billy Loomis.
Yeah,
and I hope they continue with that, and I hope he's in this film.
Yeah,
Still doing that, because I think that would be really cool.
If you hadn't realized it, spoilers for the Scream films. I've got to say it. I do think they slightly underutilized that in the fifth film, which is partly because they were struggling with the legacy characters and the new characters. They couldn't fully get into the new characters. So I'm not saying I don't need it as a must, but I'd be good with it. And I hope they will continue to explore the whole possible killer angle, which I'll get to. Which I like, because one of the main things, I mean, there are many things. One of the things I love about the Scream films is Sydney Prescott as a character and the great arc that she has through the trilogy. And I like that they have found a new person with and given them a bunch of layers to explore, and are just great for a whodunit. So that's good. We look forward to that. The main things I want to talk about is they released a poster. I was very excited. The promotional material for this film has been great. There's a poster that's the Ghostface mask, but it's like a subway map, but it lays out the Ghostface mask.
Yeah, I've seen that one. That's cool.
There's another one that's the board game Guess Who, and it's got the faces of the people. I love
I've also seen that one.
Like in whodunits, like the Scream TV series does it, where it releases a bunch of promo shots where everyone's got like half a face that's a Scream mask. It's just hype up that whodunit element. I love it. So to talk about some cast people, Samara Weaving from Ready or Not, woo, she was good. One of the
you know who directs this film?
I didn't know. Is it that same director? I think I did know that.
Both guys who did the last Scream film and this film are the people who made Ready or Not.
It's perfect, because that film is it's not remotely like Scream, but it's tonally goofy, which fits for a Scream kind of film. Tony Revolari, as in Flash Thompson from the Spider-Man films, among other things, but that's where I know him from.
You've seen Grand Budapest Hotel?
I have not seen Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, bro.
I don't know if I've seen any Wes Anderson films. I know, this is deep.
Bro, you need to see, like, that was like his...
I know.
You know when the films have that, and introducing...
Yeah, no, I know, and
He played the bellhop Zero.
I've seen him in interviews and stuff talking about it, and he seems lovely. I expect he will be a light comic relief character, knowing.
Oh yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, he'll probably be either a light comic relief character or an asshole. Probably both.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope they do more with Flash Thompson as a character in the Spider-Man films. By the way, this is a deeply sad character that they've just not. It's just kind of a joke of look how sad this guy's life is. It's just, I feel sorry for him. Anyway, Josh Segarra from Arrow and Orange is the New Black, and recently She-Hulk, if you like that.
Who is he in Orange is the New Black?
I don't know. I know him from the other two things, and I looked up what else he was in. Apparently he's in Orange is the New Black. I don't know.
I'll look him up while you talk about him.
For Google. He is amazing at playing psychotic, so I really kind of hope he's the killer. But he could also just...
That would be bad casting, though, wouldn't it?
Well, no, but most people wouldn't know him as that. But I know him. But also, though, the Scream franchise is too good at that kind of thing. Where, I mean, they could easily point to how obvious this guy is, and still, it would be kind of a surprise, because these films can. It's hard to predict a Scream film. I think he could also just be either a rookie cop or a cop son or a macho boyfriend, because he just has that look. I hope he doesn't. He's so underutilized in She-Hulk. and the he just the kind of character doesn't fit his what I know that he could do well. So I hope they use him to good effect. But yeah. Also, Hayden Panettiere, if that's how you say her name, has in Kirby from Scream 4.
Yeah.
Who I would need to rewatch the. I've been meaning to rewatch the scenes because she full on is stabbed, and as far as I'm concerned, died. I don't remember if there is any line about turns out she's alive, if that was something that was cut.
All right, let me
is there any actual confirmation within the film, or is it just
not in that film, but the next film?
No, oh,
in Scream 5, there is confirmation she's alive.
Oh my goodness,
a scene where Jack Quaid's character is on his laptop in his in a room, and he's watching something on YouTube about Ghostface, like a stab film thing,
right?
And in the like related videos. On the right, there is like interview with Ghostface survivor Kirby and a picture of her.
That's cool.
There's a little Easter egg in Scream 5 that confirms she survived.
Nice. Did you?
But at the same time,
yeah.
So two of the characters, two of the characters from Scream 5. This is a big spoiler thing, but you know this at this point. Everything we're going to be talking about is spoiler heavy about Scream 1 to 5,
yeah.
Not 6 because it's not out yet. So don't worry, we're not going to spoil Scream 6. Anyway, two of the characters in Scream 5, last you see them, they've been stabbed and left bleeding out on the floor. You know?
People
got the jock.
Yeah, but the jock, he gets wheeled into a. He was, but that one was a classic Scream example of they give him a death scene like Dewey, and then they show him just in the last shot of him being wheeled into a ambulance because I guess he's fine. So you do see.
I just wasn't paying attention enough then. And then there's the
background thing, but yeah, I think it's Mindy runs over to him, the twin.
And then there's the psychotic. The new Randy type, the one that seems to have has a weird sense of empathy. Like she just seems to I was like she got like stabbed in like the mouth or something, and then you don't.
Yeah, I don't think she just got like hit over the head, and then they just kind of ignored her for the rest of the third act. I think she wasn't a death moment.
I think she was like bleeding,
and you see it. She's at some point there, and she runs over to Chab's.
That's the thing, is that it's so minuscule.
Yeah.
I missed it, and I was like, the last time I saw these characters, they were like left bleeding out on the floor. And so it seems to be a trend almost. So just have a character at this point, having a character sort of just like last time you see them, they've just been sort of stabbed, and the next movie they're fine.
I don't know if I love or hate it because. I'm so happy Dewey didn't die, although that would have been such a better death than his actual death in Scream 2. That scene is heartbreaking. And at the end, it's just like, yeah, no, he's fine. It's like, okay, well, fine then. I mean, I like where they end up. He and Gale have a nice little arc until Scream 5. Anyway.
Yeah.
My immediate thought upon hearing Kirby's in this film, because I think they announced that pretty early on, as far as the announcements of these of the film has been.
Yeah. There was a cast announcement before there was any press, promotion, posters and trailers. Yeah.
My thought was that she'd just be back to be killed off as a loose end in the opening, because that is fitting for a Scream thing to do.
She's become a fan favorite character, so her bringing her back
remotely is not remotely interesting as a character. I do not understand. I don't care about her. I mean, it's a Scream film. I'm sure I love it, but I don't. When watching that film, she's not a character that I would have particularly remembered. Besides, I mean, she has a distinctive haircut. That's how I remember her. As a character, I can't tell you anything about her really.
She's got a nice little Karen cut going for her, but yeah, she's a. I don't know, I remember watching it and I'm like, I don't like this character. I mean, I don't dislike her. There's nothing to not like.
Yeah.
I like her more. Like, that's the thing. She's like the Randy.
Yeah, you say that, but then I never thought of her like that. And then people were like, oh, she's like the new Randy. And I was like, She does not have that. Mindy has that charisma. Love Mindy. Kirby does not have that. Don't you?
Here's the thing. I don't like the character of Mindy. Or I didn't like the character of Mindy.
Right.
Because she seemed to like lack. It was weird because she seemed to like. It was one of those things. I get that they're aware that it's a movie that's aware of movies and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, there has to be that believability that they're living in a real world. Yeah. Her complete kind of almost like apathy to death. She seemed to be.
I was
like, I think they were doing it with her character to try and make it dress her up as maybe she's the killer. But I was just sat there. But when you find out in that film that she's not, it's a bit like, oh, so she's just like so delusional that she doesn't even like that death isn't even like something to be something to be sad about.
I think
I thought it was like, bro, for real, have some like respect, you know, with some of the stuff she was doing. Like it just threw me out. I'm like, you gotta be like. I thought she became quite unlikable in how far she went into her the whole movie thing. I don't know. I didn't like it.
In the new cast's opening scene in that school yard area, she did make some Stu-esque comment that was really like, that I agree was strangely. Well, not what a real person would say, essentially. However, for the rest of the film, she sold me. The scene where she was explaining recalls and all that, love it. The bit in the basement later, all of the stuff on the couch with her, watching Randy. Oh my god, I love it. Love her. She's my new favorite character. Don't know.
This is where we disagree. I prefer Kirby, whereas you prefer Mindy.
I don't understand. She's okay.
There was not like I found it's like the way Mindy reacted to like
the initial thing. I agree. She made some strange comment about gutting or something in the first in the.
She just seems so detached from reality. And it made her seem like a fucking psychopath. And I was like, I can't, how do I like this character? Right. I was like, it's just like, I know that they're trying to paint her out maybe as a suspect, but it just makes me just not like this character. Like if she's not and is going forward in the franchise, maybe in a new film, maybe because she had a brush with death, maybe she'll be a lot more, I don't know, empathetic, you know that you can die and that death is actually no joke. Because it's like, you gotta have that fear of death and stuff. Whereas, like, when someone dies, you're just like, "Oh, it's like in that movie when, like, bro, like, there's time and place, bro." Like, I get that they know there's the whole thing about the movie, but at the same time, you gotta understand it's a bit too meta. I found her character too meta,
right?
And it to the point where it was less of a character because she didn't seem to have a character. It made her just seem like a psychopath.
Fair.
And then, so that was my thing with her. Whereas Kirby was like aware and a movie nerd and all that sort of stuff, but still was a believable, but possessed herself as a believable person that lived in a real world. You know,
yeah.
That's why I liked Kirby more. You know, more. What do you call it? What's the word? More convincing. More convincing as an actual person. That's what I mean.
I can agree with that much. She's probably my favorite of the three Randys, if you want to call them that a category now. But Noah, who is the Randy of the TV show, wins by a long shot. We love Noah. I've
not seen the show.
The distinctive look of the character on the poster, in my flow of consciousness, I wonder if they're going to actually set her up as a series regular. Because she seems to have a leather jacket, looks like she's going to be your standard badass. I saw an article the other day, I just saw the title that says, Kirby could be filling in for the role Sydney would have had or something, or in the original script or something, which I feel like she was announced so early on that she would have already had a role. But maybe that's the case. Maybe some of what Sydney had is going to Kirby.
Maybe
has that I don't know, Jamie Lee Curtis kind of look to her. And again, that could be deliberately misleading. Who knows? She could also be the killer. She's not, but I'm throwing it out there because it's only a matter of time before.
I have a theory as to why she could be the killer, though.
She's not, but
I have a theory.
I think if she
is the killer, it's because with that Easter egg in Scream 5 of her being interviewed, it might be like a fame thing. And the fact they're in New York and stuff like that, it could be that like she had a newfound sense of fame from being a Ghostface victim.
Right.
That she would pose as Ghostface and commit crimes and pose herself as the victim for further to become the new Sidney Prescott.
And that would be like a repeat of 4, kind of.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Because that her whole thing was that she was trying to be the new Sidney Prescott. Yeah, okay, that'd be fair enough.
I think it's only a matter of time before, first of all, there are 3 or more killers, that's another thing, people have been raving about that. One of the original endings of Scream 3 being that it was a bunch of fans who set it all up.
Would have been better, though.
Anything
would have been better than Scream 3's reveal.
A
long-lost brother? Come on.
This is the thing. I like what the commentary Scream 3 is giving about Hollywood and abuse and all that, and it does tie in very nicely with all of that.
Which is, I should rewatch it now that Weinstein's been done.
And if that wasn't... I know it's ironic because it comes up in the like opening of the film, a Weinstein production or whatever. I don't know if they hadn't done the brother thing. A lot of those themes about the trauma of the mother and all that, I feel like wouldn't have been as present. So I do like what that brother thing ends up brings film. At the same time, when the mask came off, I was like, "Who's this guy again?" Because he was not in enough film before that. What was I saying? So I think there could easily at some point there will be 3 or more killers. There was going to be 3 killers in the original version of Scream 2, so I'm always suspecting it. I hope it's not one, just because I like the dynamic of multiple. But it's also only a matter of time though before an ex-victim becomes a killer, because they were toyed with the idea with Sam, and I will talk. I'll mention it later, but that's always going to be they could either do it or not do it of having Sam turn out to be the killer given her past. But they could also
Sam's the new protagonist, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And obviously they alluded to the idea, and it was one of my several theories in the first film, and then it wasn't that. But I mean, they're going to continue that theme, but they could continue that theme, and then it could turn out to be Kirby or. Maybe not. I don't know. So that's that. Jack Champion is also an actor who is in this film. They were just in Avatar, The Way of Water, as a character called Spider in that film.
What a great name.
Recently. I think it was a nickname. Their real name was Marcus, but they were they were okay in that film. Good enough. I don't...
Fair enough.
Have any particular thoughts on them, but I'm just surprised, having looked at the poster, by the number of people that I recognize. There's also Dermot Mulroney, who I've seen in Friends and I know is in Insidious 3, but I am the Purge TV series, which are things I haven't seen.
Dermot what?
If you look up the poster, it's Dermot Mulroney. They have that look that's like, oh, I've seen that guy before somewhere. So I assume, based on the poster, that they're playing the police officer of this film, because it occurs to me that they're gonna have to have a police officer of the film, because I guess you kind of have to, and Dewey's not around. But oh my gosh, if they are, it's gonna be a huge hole to fill. It's going to be hard to get past the fact that it's not Dewey.
They can't just have him be Dewey, you know what I mean? They can't just have him be a goofy police officer. The guy has to be a different character, you know?
I don't think they will, though, because police officer characters are incredibly generic and uninteresting in horror films in general. Like, Dewey was such a breath of fresh air because they were this lovable, not quite idiot, but quirky, innocent person.
Yeah. I mean, you can create a character and make them interesting without them being a goofy character. You know what I mean? I just think if you just make this character goofy, then if you make a cop character goofy in a Scream series, it's just going to be a pale imitation, isn't it?
Yeah. Usually, I think you get the macho, to me, unrelatable characters of, I'll solve this, you kids get out of the way. And some of them turn out to be the killer, or their son turns out to be the killer. It happens so much, and I'm sick of the trope. I don't want to see it. So that does tend to be those small-town cops in horror films, just because a lot of horror films are small-towns. So I don't know if they'll do it in the city, but yeah, I just can't see myself being interested in them if they are a police officer. I hope they're killed off pretty quickly or have some interesting dynamic. I think
probably with Gale.
It could be... it could also be
so I imagine what they're gonna do with Gale in this movie is probably try and have her move on with the death of Dewey.
I hate what Scream 5 did with breaking them up, because they had a nice arc that ended happily, and then Scream 5's like, no, actually they're miserable again.
True. I can just imagine that the arc of this film is going to be her struggling to move on because of Dewey. Like, it's probably like, if this guy's a cop, he might just be like the new love interest, and she's got like, she's apprehensive about it because of Dewey.
I really hope so. I don't think so. I don't think people would hate that. And I would also hate that. I don't want to see anyone else with Gale, and I don't imagine they would. I imagine they would know better than that, but I also imagine they would know better than to split them up in the first place.
We'll see.
Don't be saying things like that.
We'll see.
I spend the entirety of any whodunit, especially a Scream film, thinking, oh, they could be the killer. No, they could be the killer. And looking at where people are at certain times to narrow it down, which is difficult with two killers, but you can by the third act usually narrow it down, because I didn't get it through watching the first three. I did for the fifth, but that's four, I should say, because I did get it for the fifth. But when you rewatch certainly the first three, you can see where everyone is, and yeah, that makes sense. So you can usually work out where, based on where people are, if you spend your whole time in your own head doing that. So general theories that I want to bring up is, number one, Sam is the killer. It's got to be said, because I don't think they will actually do it, but there's a chance. And they're gonna play with the idea, at least. And
they played a bit a little in Scream 5, but not enough. Yeah,
it makes sense that they will continue that. Also,
because I do think that, you know, it's definitely not going to be General Ortega.
I don't think that will.
It's definitely not going to be General Ortega, because if they're going to look for someone to be the new Sidney Prescott, they're probably going to make it her because of just her. Wednesday came out, she's got this real hype around her. They're not going to get rid of her. And considering in the first film just how helpless she was, you know what I mean? And everything, there's no way that she's suddenly going to be a killer in the next film. No, yeah. a bit too much of a jump.
I first of all wouldn't say
so. If they make Sam the killer, it would be that seems like a trilogy ender almost. Like, it would seem like, I think they might play with it in this movie, but I don't think she'll be the killer. But if you do another film and make a trilogy of these movies. Then I think she probably would be the killer, and it would then, and that makes cement General Ortega as the protagonist of the new Scream series.
Potentially. I don't think that either she or Tara, General Ortega, that either of them are safe, because there are two of them. I think they could, I don't think General Ortega will be, I don't think Tara will be the killer. I think Sam is more likely to turn out to be the killer, if anyone, but I think either of them could die, because Sam can die as a surprise thing and then have Tara take over, and Tara can die and it will motivate Sam. I think it's more
I don't think they'll do it, though.
I don't know.
Because like Jenna Ortega is kind of becoming this like new scream queen and new front. She's got this leading lady on the up kind of thing. So I think if anything they're going to try and make it a new Sydney Prescott.
She could die because she's becoming too known.
She could, but I just think that they probably see the franchise continuing with her. If anything, that's just my thing. Like if they. Because, you know, she has that kind of, you know, she seems to be this sort of new rising star on the up. And I know that, you know, that could be like, oh, we could do it. But I think really if, like, people who are now running Scream, I think they'll probably be like, no, there's no way we're getting rid of, like, our biggest star. And, you know, from the...
Maybe.
Not their biggest star, but, like, their bigger, like, up and coming. I don't know.
I
don't think it would make sense that she would suddenly become a killer, considering that the last film was trying to get her out of Woodsboro to not get killed, you know? Yeah, I think it'd be too much of a jump from movie to movie. I think maybe they can start sowing the seeds now in this film and then, like, in the next film, but, like, I don't think in this one.
Both killers for the third one in the trilogy. That'd be awesome.
I just think it's a bit too much of a drastic shift in character, you know.
Sure, yeah, I'm throwing the idea out there just in case because I know the film's gonna play with it and we'll see. I had a caveat and I can't remember what that caveat was, so never mind. Tara, they could again. I think she may die. I think they could also kill her off in the opening as a repeat of the former film, but succeeding. I did think that, but I've seen just from a couple of shots of the trailer and the fact that I've seen her with other people in the trailer, they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that. No, because like. If they were going to kill her, they would have done it in that film. You know what I mean?
You say that, but who knows? I don't know.
That's the thing. It's more than the fact that because that scene at the beginning was basically like a redo of the opening of the original, but then she wasn't that much of a star at that point. You know, she was doing the whole Drew Barrymore thing. But the fact that she went through such a, you know, such a beating that she then is like suffering for the remainder of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. I don't think she'd be a killer in this movie, but she could in a future one. I just think it's considering what she went through, you know, considering just how much she goes through in Scream 5, I don't think in this movie she's going to be. The reason they're in New York is to get her out of Woodsboro. So that she's safe, you know?
Right.
And the fact that she's reconnecting, the whole film is her reconnecting with her sister sort of thing, and they do reconnect and stuff. I feel like if you made her the killer in Scream 6, it would undo, or like maybe even Sam, I think it would kind of undo what that film was doing. So I don't think it's going to be either of them for that reason. But like, because they've just set this up, you know, like that film set up the future of it.
Right.
And everything. They could do it in future movies, but we need to, like, you know, have more time with them before we get there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's just my thinking. I don't think it'll be either of them. They will play with it, maybe, but it just won't be until, I guess, because they'll probably be a Scream 7.
If I had...
They got this one out so quick.
If I had to guess now, I would say Sam... Well, Jenna, I don't think Tara is at all, but I think if Sam could be, but probably won't. I think there's a higher chance of her dying than being the killer.
True.
But I don't know. Number two I've committed to the Kirby dies in the opening theory, which may not be the case. We'll find out pretty quickly because it's just the opening shot of whoever is on. Although in the previous film, Tara did survive the opening, so I guess that could become a trend now. In my notes here, I just went on a little ramble about how I don't care about the character at all. I don't care why people love her.
We get it. You don't like Kirby. I don't know why you don't like her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing about her to not like. You could maybe think that you prefer Mindy to her or something like that. Yeah, but like, I think I liked the potential of the character and everything like that. Sure. I think she played the Randy role. Not necessarily of the same. I do think it was a big mistake to kill Randy in the first place.
I wasn't actually a huge fan of Randy. Side note, like I know people love Randy and I like Randy, but I'm not of the mindset of, oh, they shouldn't have killed Randy. Oh my God, I love Randy. Like, I liked him. He was good. His death served a purpose. I'm all for it. It was okay. I was much more interested in the other three of the recurring.
See, I think you could have killed Gale.
Oh no. Oh,
I think you could have killed Gale.
No.
I prefer Dewey as a character, and I think it would be an interesting dynamic for him. You know, give him a serious edge. You know, maybe not do it in the second film, but like, you know, I don't know. I would have liked Randy to be around a bit more.
I can see that. I'm fine with it. But going back to Kirby, I don't know how you go about bringing her into the story without doing the very contrived "let's go talk to an expert" thing that horror franchises do. I hope they don't do that, because
you did it in the last movie.
Did they? Who did they do that with? Oh, I guess Dewey. They did do that in the last movie. Yeah,
they did do it with Dewey. Let's go speak to an expert, and they meet Dewey, and then he predicts the killer in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It was such a like, they literally do the whole "let's speak to an expert." So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fair. I don't like the way. Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not a fan of the handling of the legacy character in that film. Which also wouldn't make sense as a thing, though, as to why these new characters have the same, if not more, expertise than Kirby, so they wouldn't really be like, "let's go talk."
"Let's speak to an expert," because I think they're just as experienced as she is. It worked when they did it with Dewey, because you know, it was his fifth movie, he'd been through it 4 times, so it makes more sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he'd been like stabbed what, like 10 times at that point, I think he says, or something like that. So I don't think, yeah, it's like, "let's speak to an expert." I think they're just going to encounter some point. I think they're just going to make her a character. I don't think they're going to kill her off. I think she's just going to be a character in the film.
Mm. What? So you think she's going to be a character that survives? We'll get to because I'm talking about killers, and I'm going to get to deaths in a bit. But
when I say a character, I don't necessarily mean she's going to survive the film. I just mean that she's going to be in the film. She's not just going to basically cameo, you know. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. Speaking of legacy characters, how Sydney's going to be handled? Because I know more than me. I didn't even know that. I found out recently through means other than you that she wouldn't be in it much. But I know you'd already said that, and I don't know how
It was a pay dispute. They had a pay dispute, and by the time they'd settled the pay dispute, they'd written the script.
Right.
And they just sort of got on without her, and. Not gonna lie, it kind of, I mean, considering having seen the fifth film, I think if there was ever a time for her to leave, it's now.
Yeah.
Because with the fifth film, it was the first movie in which she wasn't the protagonist.
Yeah.
She was a supporting character in the series she was the lead in.
Yeah.
And the considering it was going back to the original, it all takes place in the final house and in like the house of the first movie, and it's no more fitting an end for that character than the beginning, you know. And when you're introduced to her, she's moved away, she's got kids now and everything like that. I don't think they need to really explain it, really. I think you know from seeing the fifth movie that she's just not around, you know. Yeah, she's moved on, and the whole point of the fifth film is that she moved on.
She did move on, but then she came back for well, she was like, oh, Ghostface stopped happening. I'm going to come back. To be fair, she came back when Dewey died. So I suppose they could justify it that way and say, if Gail doesn't die, well, if Gail doesn't die, then she wouldn't, even if Gail does die, she wouldn't have to come back to comfort anyone. Because she doesn't really like or care about the new character, I guess. I get.
But they'd have to, she'd have to make at least a cameo if Gail dies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we know that she has some role, do we not? Doesn't she appear in the film, Neve Campbell?
Apparently not. No.
Oh,
apparently, I think she's retired from the role.
I or like, thought
not, maybe I just retired in general. Huh?
I thought she had some brief role in the film.
I don't know. I just know that there's a pay dispute, and you're gonna look it up.
No, I'll happily not know. But yeah,
they could maybe have put a cameo in there, or maybe it's a surprise, and maybe she is in the film. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But from the sounds of things, I think she's just retired.
Imagine if she's the killer. They won't do that.
Wouldn't make any sense at all.
Yeah,
wouldn't make any sense.
But also, I guess if they did have. If Kirby's introduced because the killer goes after Kirby as well, then they'd have to explain why they didn't also go after Sydney. Number three, it's labeled as number three. We've discussed many more than that, but is Gail's gotta die? Question mark. I'm not sure. I'm not as certain, but now that they've started on legacy characters, it's the next logical step. I mean, I hope Sydney isn't killed off in an opening, because that would be awful. I mean, after all she's been through, I want to just let her be happy and live elsewhere. That's fine and happy and good. But if Gail's playing a role in this film, I mean, I hope she's not killed in the opening either, but I think she may well die. I do hope it's a more satisfying death. Ideally in the third act as to build up momentum, although again, I don't really want it to struggle with having to juggle so many characters, but then if it's only one of the legacy characters, you could manage that well enough. Especially if it's something like she's helping the generic police officer character, maybe, and they do that whole romance thing. They better not do that romance thing that you suggested. I don't like that idea at all.
We'll see.
But yeah, I guess that brings me on to, there are six returning characters on the poster, not including Sydney if she does, which we could lose somebody beloved, and I am including Mindy, who is beloved in that. And it won't necessarily, I think Kirby and Gail are most likely to, Sam next up, but it could.
I think
Mindy and Chad obviously aren't safe. I hope Mindy's safe, but
I think Gail is less safe than Kirby, because I don't see the point
in bringing back end is the point.
I don't see, I don't see the point of like what they're bringing back a character like, because by they could have just let her, you know, had her been dead, you know, could have just. Why would you bring this character back just to kill them? I don't see the point in that.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because new theory that I figured it late in my extreme consciousness, that Kirby is in fact the detective rookie partner of generic police officer character, and you have Kirby as the new Dewey, because that makes a lot of sense as to how you replace Dewey is you bring back Kirby. Who people like for some reason. And I mean, presumably generic guy gets killed off, but I mean, generic guy, yeah, I have to take it as a given that he's a police officer based on the poster, but Kirby also has that kind of look. She has a gun in fact in the poster. So I'm getting those vibes. And that would be a way to overcome the Dewey factor. Maybe, if she isn't killed off in the opening, which is plausible, then I'm guessing that's what her role will be, that she's a ghost-faced investigator cop person. The old, I was traumatized and thus I became a cop backstory that they do as a thing.
Excellent.
B, But yeah, I don't know who else, if any. I mean, I don't know. They could. I think and hope that they'll keep around Mindy because she's the new Randy and people didn't like that Randy was killed off early, although if they have Kirby, they could, but I hope not. Chad would be the most okay with to go. He's a likable jock, which is unheard of in horror. Any genre perhaps that I've seen. But it's a sibling dynamic, and I love sibling dynamics. I love that our new four are two pairs of siblings. So I'm not really here for any of them dying, but I guess Chad would be the one I'd choose. I really like that having two final girls aspect. I don't really want Tara to end up, especially because I prefer Sam is a more interesting character than Tara. Like Tara,
true
trooper. I wouldn't say she was helpless in five. I was there like, damn girl, you keep striving for living, and she was doing well. But I don't.
She wasn't helpless, no, but she got lucky.
But if they did kill Sam in this one, then they could go through a whole grief thing. But I guess they have kind of already, well, they have very much already done that with Sydney. So I don't know where they would take Tara to keep her interesting. There's more about Sam that's more layers to it.
That's what we could do with this movie, because not going to lie, the thing with Tara is that they couldn't really do much with her character. Because I mean, they did in the sense that they did their dynamic, but they couldn't do much of her character because she was basically just getting a fucking pounding through that movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So now that hopefully she's just like not on crutches and in wheelchairs this whole film,
yeah,
they can actually do more with her and actually explore her a bit better. Which is, I'm pretty sure, is what they'll do.
Hopefully.
But yeah, it's. I don't necessarily have a theory on who's the killer in this film. Only based on just like, because like the killers have in the past been somewhat name actors, not always, but like. So you got in the first Scream, you had Matthew Lillard, who later on became a name. You had the second one, you had Timothy Oliphant, who later
came at that point though.
Yeah, I know. And it, like in the last movie, well, that's a big spoiler. You had Jack Quaid, who was, you know, kind of, or at this point, you know, he'd done The Boys, and I think he'd been in a few other movies and stuff. They don't go for big actors, but actors you somewhat recognize. So, like, there was Timothy Oliphant, who wasn't big at the time, but, like, became big and stuff. I don't know. My theory is that it's either one of the two sort of mostly recognizable guys. So, the guy who plays, was it Tony River? What's his name again?
Yes. Yep. Guys, too far gone on my notes at this point. Tony Ravioli, I don't remember. Revolori.
Tony Ravioli, yay.
Revolori.
What am I going to do to get a pizza pie around here? Yay.
You think Flash Thompson's going to be the killer of this film? I think he's far.
He's an Italian-American because it's New York.
Yeah, I got it.
I will walk out the cinema if Tony Ravioli doesn't go, can I get a pizza pie around here? What the hell? That's dumb. I think it's either him or it's Samara Weaving, but I think I have the more stronger leaning towards it being Samara Weaving. And I think it's just mostly because she's worked with the directors before. Mm. So like in Ready or Not. I just feel like there's going to be some kind of significance to her being in this film if they cast stuff. So that's just my gut. My gut says it's Samara Weaving.
I think killers wise, Josh Segarra. I know he can play psycho well. I'd enjoy it if they did it. There's Liana Liberato. She's a redhead on the poster who I do not recognize, but she's a redhead and thus could be the killer in my mind. That she has the look on that poster of could be killer vibes.
Okay.
Who do we have next? Yeah, another way also of shaking things up, with not really, but just Scream likes to do things and then comment on them. They could have two female killers, because that would be a thing that they could comment on. So they could have her and Samara Weaving, for example. Though I think if Samara Weaving doesn't, if she's not the killer, then I think she's going to be killed off in the opening because she's a big name, and I think that's probably why she's in the film, if it's not Kirby.
That's fair enough.
I ultimately replaced the Kirby prediction with, I think Samara Weaving will probably be killed off in the opening. And Kirby will probably be Detective Cop. Sam, I'm going to say Sam will die, because I don't know, I'm going to throw out theories now.
So we've heard all your various theories.
Killer-wise, I don't actually know who would be the killer. I don't think it's any returning character. I so hope it's not going to be that the police officer dude has police officer's son, who's Josh Segarra. Because even though I love that guy and he can play psycho, I don't want them doing the sheriff's son turns out to be the killer trope, because it's so done. It's an old trope. Unless they comment on it loads and then say, no, it can't possibly be that, and then turns out, because, you know, maybe that'll work. I don't know. I don't know who the killer will be. I can't place bets. I don't know.
So you want to do this whole theories thing and you can't place bets?
I can't. I mean, deaths-wise, I think everyone below the Scream for title on the poster will die, except for the twins. Except Chad may die. Sam, I guess, may die. They just ignore the placement on the poster. I just completely messed with that. I don't know. I think... So there are six returning characters and about 7 other characters. So all six returning characters could survive, and the 7 other characters... Well, I suppose if 2 of them are the killer, that's 5 people. So that's about 5 deaths. I'm just shouting numbers at this point and not giving any conclusion. I don't know.
You're not putting, like, there's no like gut feeling on who you think it might be. I'm not just saying various people. I'm like a gut feeling. I mean, various people, unless you can say various people if you think it's multiple killers, but like not like this person or this person, like this person and that person kind of thing. Like, who is your gut feeling as a killer?
Redhead. Purely based on... I looked at the previous film poster and like, where are the killers placed on the poster? Well, how could this... What could this mean? I can't place anything, but I...
Well, one of them was like front and center.
Yeah, and then sometimes they're not, so I don't know. But I think through the course of this discussion, I've decided Sam will die.
Okay.
I think Samara Weaving will be killed off in the opening. If they're not killed off in the opening, then they'll be the killer. And if Tony Ravioli turns out to be the killer, I'll be surprised. But
Tony Ravioli! Yay!
But there are... I don't know. I mean, it could be another... It could be Spider from Avatar, for all I know. But who knows?
I love how this man wants to do a theories thing, but then can't make one of his own, man. What the hell? You can't stick to, like, you got theories. You just ain't got one theory that you're like, this is what I feel in my guts.
When I was watching Scream 5, pretty quickly I was like, okay, I have 3 theories. Either it's Sam, could also be the boyfriend, or it could be Mindy / both twins. That was they were my going theories through most of it, but I was also keeping track of everyone's movements, and the theories completely changed. I thought at one point maybe it's Wes, because that would be a way to send off the, you know, but I don't know. Throughout the film, I will have multiple theories, which will probably be none of these, and they will all change. and I will be sure to talk everyone through that process after the film. But
yes, we will review.
Redhead, Samara Weaving, if she does not die in the opening, which she probably will. And probably someone else. Josh Segarra, let's say him.
Probably someone else.
Who do you think will be the killer?
Me or the audience?
You, Dan.
As I said, I think it's Samara Weaving, but I'm just
guessing. What if she dies in the opening?
Huh?
What if she dies?
What if she dies in the opening?
Pick a face.
Part of me. No, that wouldn't make any sense.
Thanks for that.
Like, a part of me thought, what if Gale was the killer? But I'm like, that wouldn't make sense.
You know, yeah, I mean, all of the thoughts have to cross your mind at some point, but nah, I don't think so.
It was like, what if, like, you know, she can't handle him dying, and it's just sort of like this whole thing of she's just sort of like, well, if you can't live, then why do these people get to live, or something like that. But the fact she helped them survive doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it doesn't. I don't know, because my gut says that Samara Weaving's in there for a reason. If not, it's Tony Ravioli, yay! Because, like,
they have to make a face in the opening, though, don't they?
Huh?
They have to kill, or I guess not kill in Tara's case, but they have to kill a big face in the opening. So unless
it might not be any of these people, you know. Well, it might be one of these.
They wouldn't
people.
Have somebody completely new who hasn't been on the poster be the in the opening and them die. It would.
I mean, did you see Scream 4 when they had Anna Paquin and Kristen Bell?
I suppose so. Yes, but
so yeah, it could be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But yeah, that film would be difficult because you'd have to have four faces on the screen on the poster because there are kind of four deaths in that opening.
But that's the thing, is that in the sense that they've done that, they've done the whole person who dies first in the movie is on the post. They did it for the first two movies, you know? And then I think they did it with the third movie as well. You know, they did it with the original trilogy where, like, I think that was it Liev Schreiber that died first in the third movie, I think.
Yeah.
But he was like a main character in the second film.
A wife, but yes.
Didn't he die as well, though?
Yeah, he dies technically after the wife.
He died in the opening scene. That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, yeah. Well,
he's the one who got the phone call.
Yeah, so it's like they always have they've had the person who dies first in the poster for so long. It's almost now a convention. So I don't know.
It is a convention.
Going to...
I believe that it's, but there's that's. I think it's a tradition, and it's one they will probably stick to.
All right. I mean, yeah, it could be Samara Weaving that dies first, but I don't know. I don't think so.
It could be Gale as well. They could.
They could just kill Gale on the opening.
I don't know, but I hope they don't.
She has. It's the fact that she's sort of outlived her purpose.
Yeah.
You know? She's had. You know, she's outlived her purpose. So it's a bit like, unless they plan on doing something brand new with her,
yes,
or something like that.
I love the way she bounced off Neve Campbell in the previous film, but she doesn't have that, nor does she have the love arc of Dewey. So I don't. Unless they do. They're so not doing the whole new police officer. I will hate you personally if that comes true.
You never know. We'll see.
I think more likely is that they'll do a how do I go on, and then she finds hope. But even that, I don't think they will. I think she will just probably be there to help out. But yeah, I mean, she doesn't have much purpose, but she will probably die in a Dewey-esque fashion, maybe.
Yeah,
help
I mean,
and die mid film or something.
Maybe, yeah, cause that's when Dewey died. I thought it was at the end of the film, but
midpointish, I think.
Yeah, it was about midpoint. Yeah, but I feel like, you know, it would, if they're going to kill someone, like opening scene, I think do it to Gale because she's just get rid of, like, then you don't have to like deal with legacy characters anymore.
I agree, but I don't want it. I didn't want Dewey to die the way they did, and I don't want Gale to die off without the momentum of it being at the end of the film.
Fair enough.
Nor, you know, like, especially, and even worse, if they did that to Sydney, that would just be awful. I would hate that.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't do it in the opening scene either if Sydney's not in the film.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Because I feel like Sydney would, I don't know, would Sydney have a reaction? Also, though, if the killer went for Gale in the opening scene, it wouldn't make sense that they wouldn't then go for Sydney as well. So I guess they
True.
Can't do that. Maybe.
Fair.
I don't know. Samara Weaving's dying in the opening, I've decided. If not, Kirby will be in the opening and maybe survive it.
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily have to kill someone in the opening, as they proved the last movie. But we'll
see. That might be the new tradition of not killing someone in the opening. I don't know.
Yeah, putting them through hell, making you think that they've died, only for them to
everyone not... can survive in a Scream film, no matter how many times they're stabbed.
Oh yeah, they just get stabbed like a bunch of times. It was one of those things. Yeah, like you were like, "There's no way Jenna Ortega's surviving this."
Yeah,
and she does. So yeah. We'll see. We'll see what. We will see when the film comes out in March, and we'll see if any of these theories are correct.
So those have been our Scree VI predictions. That's Scream 6. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, that is predictions of Scream 6, and then our Oscar thing, my little rundown. I did that an hour ago.
I did think I had about 20 minutes worth of discussion in Scream, maybe 10, but yeah. An hour.
Hmm. Yeah, it's been flown by.
Enjoyed. Good job if you stuck through it till the end.
Exactly.
Give us a shout out of your Scream predictions. Some of you probably know the answer to some of these things if you've watched the trailers, because you can see probably who's alive and who's not. But
that's why I've avoided them.
About horror trailers. Cabin in the Woods, I love that film, but the trailer shows that there's the two characters who are the last just to live in the film are in a very intense, clearly late in the film situation. It's like, well, I know those two people survive. And they did. So, don't watch trailers, guys.
I've only seen the first little teaser they released, which is really good because it doesn't give away shit.
That's lovely. I'm happy for...
All it does is show you it's in New York. And that's about it.
It shows you that they're in a subway. I didn't know that. Now I'm spoiled on the subway location of the film.
Hey, you can't do it. You can't go do it a Big Apple without being on the ground. Hey, it's Tony Ravioli.
Okay, yeah.
That's become a thing now, hasn't it?
I think I'm like...
Tony Ravioli is such a... That is a lazy, Italian American character name. Yeah. What do you call him? I'm fucking Tony Ravioli or some shit. But yeah.
Ravolari, which is very similar.
Huh?
In my defense, it's Ravolari, which is very similar.
Ravolari. Could be him.
If you've enjoyed, please give us a follow. I don't think we like or subscribe here, but follow if you...
Follow us.
We're in England.
Follow us. Follow us.
More.
follow us.
I believe. There's no specific schedule. Next up, we're doing some things. Who knows? We'll find out.
Indeed, we need to figure out what our next episode will be. We know we have some plans, but for future episodes, like when Scream 6 comes out, we're going to do a little special on that one. I mean, this one, we've been talking a lot about Scream for this one, but we'll review the movie, see if our predictions were correct.
I'm going to make a little bingo card of things that I think will happen.
Yeah, and then we're going to go through that. And I think our plan, at least I don't know if it's our plan, but like a suggestion we've had is to do what do you call it? Because the whole thing with Scream being like, do you like scary movies and stuff? We do ourselves a little horror movie quiz, and that will complete our Scream special.
Yeah,
and that won't be till March.
Yeah,
because goddamn movie won't come out.
Comes out before it does in America. We get it apparently 8th of March, though our closest audience is 9th of March for some reason, whereas they get it in the 10th. So, yay England for a movie.
Yay! We can spoil it.
Yeah, where can people find you?
Where can they find me? In my house.
Okay, cool.
I think I've made this joke before. But anyway, you can find me on social medias because everyone is there. I do reviews. I haven't for a little while, but I'll get into it. Doing movie reviews and stuff on Dan the Movie Man. It's like a Wix website, and I've got a Facebook page on it and everything. But what about you, Ollie?
Me? Oh boy. You can find me over at OJWH Reviews, where I talk about films and TV and stuff, except not stuff. I speak about Avatar: The Last Airbender, The Last Airbender, the movie. Avatar. I don't think I've spoken about Avatar: The Way of Water. No, I think I saved that. I don't know. There's some James Bond. There's some Buffy. There's some Angel. I'm gonna continue with Buffy and Angel. I'm gonna go on a little side note rant.
Because he loves Joss Whedon. So, he's a real personal hero of his, not creatively, just personally.
So Buffy, I watched when it came to Channel 4 in the UK. I watched through a good portion of it. Then at some point, I had access to Amazon Prime, and so I checked whether it was on HD on there, so whether I would watch it there instead. And I saw that the episodes were ever so slightly slower, like 2 minutes overall, where it's been ever so slightly stretched out. And I was like, why on earth is this a thing? And I tried to Google it, and I got some spoilers, and silly me, and I didn't find out an answer. And then a couple of years later, I found out that that is actually the correct version. And that when DVDs are released in England in England, sometimes they are slightly sped up, presumably for disk space. The British version is 2 minutes or so faster every thing. But now I cannot watch it the way it was originally meant to be watched, because it is just... it feels too slow. Like when you're singing along to that great Angel theme, it's not keeping up pace with you. Also, there is an infamous HD remaster of Buffy. The Channel 4 version was the original. It's got the original aspect ratio, 4:3. At some point, they remastered into 16:9, which essentially they used the original shots as they were shot before it was cut for the TV. But the problem is, as they were making it, they specifically designed the shots with 4:3 in mind, and thus you can see a bunch of crew in shots and such. They also tried to redo a bunch of the lighting and such, and it looks awful, and I hate it. So I had a whole big thing about how am I going to watch Buffy and Angel, because I need to watch it now slightly faster, because I don't care about the original in that way, because it just feels wrong to watch it 2 minutes slower. But also, I insist on watching the original cut as opposed to the remaster, which is on all of the easily accessible DVDs, and thus I can't buy it. I can't watch it on Disney Plus or on Amazon or anything, because they've all got the rubbish versions. So I've just shilled out money for a used copy of the original box set that has the original versions. I'm pretty sure, and I'm going to be sad if it isn't, but I'm pretty sure it is. And so I will continue with the reviews there. That was my little rant, but I will continue with those. OJWH Reviews, where I talk about films and TV and stuff, except not stuff. It's over on Facebook, that place that everybody uses to review stuff, except not really.
He does not like stuff.
Thanks for listening. We won't see you. You'll hear us next time, if you choose to tune in next time. If you don't,
yeah, but you're... fair enough. Holly, where are you going to be? Because you're going away, aren't you?
I'm not telling the viewers my personal plans. I'm going to Norway. I'll probably have...
I'm going to Norway. My hotel room is...
I'll update you on how it was when I get back, which will probably be next... Well, it will be next episode. Hope.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
So it's probably going to be a bit of a delay, is there, on an episode if you're away.
So it's released.
Huh?
Probably, unless that TV episode is released.
Are you like holding? You're holding the boys at One Flower Two Turtles Productions hostage. Like, release the TV episode. We ain't getting anything.
Cool.
They might just be like, what if they go like, Dan, we need you to do a solo episode, but he's not here. Talk about like, I don't know. Butt stuff for an hour, who cares? Just talk about it.
Anything for the TV.
Anything but TV. I don't know. We'll see.
Thanks, bye.
You have been listening to a One Flower Two Turtles audio production. For more information on all our radio shows and podcasts, check out our website, 1f2t.co.uk. sounds of the 1F2T, the sounds of life.